I'll discuss it. Let me introduce you. We've had Deanna, our friend of the show, and personal friend, I guess, over the years grown to be. Somebody I highly respect, Deanna Spingola. She's got a regular program over on, as they say, another network over on Republic Broadcasting. Long-running program, written several books, an authority on our enemies, certainly of sorts, self-made in many respects. And we're happy to have her back. So I just wanted to give you that introduction, Deanna. Glad to have you back. Haven't talked to you in a while. A lot of water under the bridge, and it seems to be rising in a gusher.
It is. I don't know whether it's the river or the water or the swamp. I think it might be the swamp.
You're draining the swamp and rising the river. It was so deep, the swamp was. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are happening, of course, and I got a hold of you last week on short notice, as is usually my way, and you said, I got company and this, that, and the other, and so I said, we'll try you next week, and so I wanted to get you on today, simply because you have a real finger on the pulse of these guys. You live in the Chicago area, correct?
Yes.
Up there in Romville, which has been specifically singled out by our new president here recently, as to the, some of the events up there, and wanted to touch with that, just touch with you and get your views on all this. And I know the audience is akin on the thought patterns that we both share. And so what's on your plate?
Okay, regarding the murder capital of the country, I think that, I mean, there's several different issues regarding that, but I think that Rahm Emanuel was positioned as the mayor. And of course we know, well, I know that, he was not eligible to be mayor because he had given up residency. Even though he still owned a home here, he had given up residency when he went to Washington, to work under the Obama administration. I gotta unplug this phone. And then all of a sudden he comes back to Chicago, and he's one of three notorious brothers. But anyway, so he comes back to Chicago, and there was a group of people led by Jeff Joe Black, or at least he was certainly one of the persons who was campaigning against Rahm Emanuel, because for the simple reason that Rahm Emanuel did not have residency. And it was during a court session that the people who had rented his home said, no, I mean, he left and we've rented the home for, a certain amount of time. And then the next day, they come back into court, and lo and behold, during the night before, they had gone down into the basement and discovered that Rahm Emanuel had, well, dozens and dozens of boxes, which indicated that he certainly had not given up his residency, since he left all these personal effects in the basement of his home. But imagine that they had not realized all these boxes of Rahm Emanuel's was down in the basement for all that time. It must have been 3 years or so. But anyway, Jeff Joe Black ended up being homeless. He was a white-collar worker, and he ended up being homeless. And, it was just really a sad situation. And he got really frightened, and so he left town. He went to Pennsylvania to live with his mother. And within just a very, very short period of time, she ended up going off of a overpass into the path of a truck.
Poor old Jeff Joe, it's very upsetting when you lose these elections. It turns on something as nebulous as the definition of the word resident.
Yeah. And of course, since then, the murder rate has gone up. The chaos has gone up, the crime has gone up, little children are being shot, and I think personally that it is deliberate, and I think that whenever you have a situation like that, when the federal government takes note, well, I think it's orchestrated so that the federal government, the feds, can come in and take over. You know, it's anytime that there's chaos anywhere, whether you're talking Chicago, whether you're talking Iraq, whether you're talking anywhere, if there's chaos or some sort of crisis, well, we got to send in more enforcements, right?
I think that, you know, Chicago is recognized as one of the most corrupt spots on the planet. Not
oh, it always
most,
has
but
been.
One of the, okay?
So it always has
that,
been.
That's a given, right? That's what's
yeah.
Calling. But as it has developed into this form of mafia, this worldwide psychopath, parasite mafia, you know, we call them the parasites here. And at the head is this guy, Rahm Emanuel. Now, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because you said he's one of a couple of very famous or notorious brothers, maybe the word you used. But I wanted to go into the background of him. His father is pretty infamous also. I'm not sure exactly of the hierarchy in a spot that he played, but he was in some hierarchical spot in the bombing of the King David Hotel, which is what drove the British out of the protectorate.
Right. Yeah, I think he was with Ergen.
He was. He was right there in the hierarchy, and he was right there involved specifically in that incident. And
right.
It gave him a lot of notoriety within the group. He's ended up retired to right there. I'm not sure how close Skokie is to you, but that's a pretty infamous area for Jewish ethnicity, is it not?
Oh, that they own it. They own Skokie. I believe that's where the Chicago chapter of the Holocaust Museum is.
Oh,
is
I
have not visited the museum because, well, I thought about it, but
you put your demonstration hat up that day. Where is, let me say, give us some reference points here, Deanne, if you would please. If you're looking at a map from the top, and there's Chicago area, there's the lake over there on the northwest or whatever, what part of town is Skokie, and whereabouts do you live in that whole general area? I'm not asking you for an address.
Yeah, don't, I'm not going to do that.
And maybe a GPS, but not
I'll
an address.
I'll be thrown off of a bridge somewhere. Well, it's up north. It's probably, up on Dempster. I would say, you know, I live in the western suburbs, and they're in the north, and Skokie is in the northern suburbs. I mean, if you're Chicago, you know, it's probably 7-8 million with the suburbs, but I mean, you have all kinds of things. You have the Temple Beth Israel up in Skokie. You have, you know, you have a lot of stuff up there, if you want bagels, that's where you go.
Okay. Or locks too. Okay. He has other brothers. I knew he had one. I didn't know he had more than that. Quite a notorious guy. My immediate thoughts when it happened, of course, he rode into D.C. on Obama's coattail there at executive meetings with the cabinet. If you can imagine this. Let's just juxtapose, you know, up here to this recent presidency, because I can't say that word, juxtapose, up here to the Trump presidency. And let's say that you had Trump sitting there in the executive boardroom with all these people like Mad Dog Mathis and these other people he's assembled as key cabinet officials, and say somebody like, some little freaky little weirdo comes up behind Trump and starts cracking his knuckles in his ear. You don't see that happening, do you, in the Trump administration or foresee that? You see, that's what happened in the Obama administration.
Well,
because Rahm Emanuel would come up behind him and snap his knuckles in his ear while everybody was sitting in those meetings.
Interesting. I wasn't aware of that. But is that your dog?
No, it's a neighbor's dog. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I'll see if I can catch him up. If I have
that's
to
all right.
I'd throw it out there.
That's all right. I am.
That was Rahm Emanuel. That was the crowds that want Rahm Emanuel. He also was notorious in the Clinton administration. He's got a really interesting past. I don't know how much you've studied him and his course of his career here, but it's pretty obvious when you do that he was in some strange places, and he precludes a lot of things that are important. Okay, and yeah. So he in the Clinton administration, he had a high position up there. Was that when he was a representative or when he was associated with the Clinton administration? Anyway, he was in the White House, and it was reputed that he was in a meeting with one of the staterooms with the big beautiful tables, and he pulled out a knife and started talking every one of his political enemies. He'd stab the middle of the table with the knife.
Oh, my gosh. I had no
idea. Dead, bam, so-and-so, dead, bam, 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 with a whole room full of people right there.
Holy cow.
Okay, this is a real little sicko. Rahm Emanuel.
Wow.
He's got as much sugar in his britches as Lindsey Graham or any of them, okay? And evidently, frequents the bathhouses and stuff up there in Chicago.
Oh, yes. Well, I've heard that.
So you got all of these things wrapped around this little Napoleonic complex, egotistical psychopath, pharisite, maniac. It happens to be your mayor, Deanna.
Yeah. No, not my mayor. My mayor, you know, I live in a suburb. I have my own mayor.
But,
yeah, I guess he was a senior advisor to Clinton from 93. The 98?
Look at somewhere in there, they ran him over. They put him in Wall Street, in some Wall Street firm. I think this was after his, he was a representative for a while. They stuck him over in some big Wall Street firm, and he made a whole bunch of money. A bunch of money on their little shenanigans. And then they piped him down, get this, to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
Holy cow.
And he was down there, probably, I think, setting up the 2008
Yeah.
It was before that. Then after that, he goes back and starts showing up, and then he ended up there as Obama's chief of staff. And look at him now. And, of course, the first thing that Larry Silverstein, BB, I'm a yo-yo Netanyahu, other yeah. best friend, besides Rahm Emanuel, the first thing he did when he got his treble damages lawsuit was go and buy the Sears Tower there in Chicago. So
yeah.
There's a number of very, very prophetic and suspicious things that are centering on your town there, Deanna. I wanted to talk about them with you.
Sure. Well, like I say, I live quite a ways from Chicago. I mean, as far as you know, maybe 27 miles away. Downtown Chicago, you know, Chicago is, you know, the hub, of course, but there are a lot of suburbs, lots and lots of suburbs.
Right. Well, I mean, the greater Chicago area, SMSA, the Standard Metropolitan Survey area, I think.
Yeah.
So, be that as it may, you being not only who you are and very aware and educated, but you live there. And so that's another reason with all this going on. There's one thing that I picked up in an interview I heard with Cliff High. It's just the new Cliff High interview. It's out with Greg Hunter over there at USAWatchdog.com. And I really respect Cliff High and what he does. And in that conversation, they were talking about this. And he alluded to the fact, well, everybody knows there's an organ transplant organization going on up there. I mean, just matter-of-factly throwing off. Is that a possibility? Have you heard anything about that?
No, but organ transplants, I mean, I've done several programs with Dr. Paul Byrne and Bernice Jones on organ transplants, and it is a hideous, horrid thing. Yep. Absolutely horrid.
Yep, a big business, and as follows these guys around, they seem to pop it up wherever there's Ukraine and any place they can get people getting killed, they go in and try and take that as one of the final spoils, I guess.
It isn't that you can't, let me clarify this. You cannot take organs, viable organs from a dead body. You actually have to, in the process of taking the organs, you murder the person. Because a heart is only viable it's not viable at all after the person's dead. The only thing you can take out from a dead body is skin, bones, and that kind of thing. But vital organs, they have to be living in order to extract those organs. And what they do is that they give you a drug. They don't want to put you to sleep, but they give you a paralyzing drug so that you cannot move. The person who is being extracted can feel the pain, okay? And their heart rate usually goes up sky high because of the pain. So if you're an organ donor, for heaven's sakes, get off the donor list. And it's presumptive in 47 states that even if you have not signed up, unless you have a card that says, I am not an organ donor, it's presumed that you are. So anybody that has not indicated that they're not, it's presumptive. If you're getting an accident, goodbye organs.
There was also a while back, came out a few years back, where they had these big holding cells that nobody knew about, where people were being taken and held for long periods of time, big detention centers and stuff there in the area by the cops. And now the cops are under siege up there because of everything that's happening and a lot of these incidents that have been internationally publicized because of the videos and whatnot. What's your feeling of all this stuff that's going on up there, Deanna, being somebody who lives there?
Well, the one individual who was shot, I think it was like 19 times in the back, he was not threatening the police. He was walking away. And the video came out, you know, like a year after. And when I took the NRA class I took an NRA class, and a lawyer, it was an all-day class. It was like from 8 in the morning until 6 in the evening. And there was a lawyer there participating in the class. He was an instructor with the class, and he said that that if you have a burglary, if you have a robber come in to your house and he's leaving your front door with your TV set and you shoot him, you can be arrested for murder, okay? You can only shoot somebody when you are being physically threatened. And that also applies to the police. You cannot just shoot somebody arbitrarily unless policeman is being threatened. And the same law applies to both the police and to private citizens. You can't just shoot somebody in the back just because you have a badge. I mean, that's just not the way it is. And this was, Laquan McDonald. He was 17 years old. And, they attempted to hide this video. But lo and behold, it did come out. And so I think that the police now are, they're a little gun shy, here. And I think also from the incidences in Ferguson. So I don't know.
They've also evidently another reason, at least possibly, for Rami being up there is because they've opened it up evidently as the other end of the pipeline for some of these Mexican drug cartels.
Not only
the drugs that are being brought in and dumped in, but also all of the guns and all of the accompanying crime and all of the weaponization and that goes along with all of that activity, especially at those levels.
Sure. I mean, the drugs get into the ghettos. I mean, they're not generated there. I believe that it's been deliberate. You take a group of people, you take away a lot of their opportunities, you give them drugs and provide guns. Well, what's going to happen? Duh.
Yeah, right. And you've got another guy up there. I haven't seen yet. He's not had very much of a high profile here lately. A guy who I actually personally respect is Louis Farrakhan. What's going on with him? I mean, have you? I haven't seen any videos or any comments on Trump or anything else.
No, I used to follow him, and in fact, I attempted to get him on my program, but that didn't happen. But I have talked to his organization, and you know, a lot of the things he says are right on. And of course, it was his organization too that produced a couple of wonderful books. Let's see about the, they must be down in my other bookshelf, you know, about the slave trade I like his organization.
I've been wanting to try to get my work to him ever since it's been out for years. And, and I know that Lynn Horowitz, because of my association with Lynn, worked with him years ago, I know that he got summoned by Farrakhan and then when his AIDS book got out and actually went up and met with him. I know that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And so I know that he's open to that sort of thing. And even though there's a Muslim conversion there and that kind of viewpoint, if you will, if you look back over his history in the early days there in D.C., he cleaned up a lot of those ghettos around D.C., and they'd stopped the drugs, and they'd stopped all that stuff. Well, boy, they defunded him just about as quick as they could get the money out of his hands.
Exactly.
He was using to accomplish those things, because that ain't what they want in the agenda of the city there. So he's a pretty good guy, I think. He gets demonized, and the one rule of thumb, Deanna, I find always applies is the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Exactly, yes. Yes, but his organization keeps a very tight rein, as can be expected, because I'm sure there's a lot of people who would like to get him.
Yeah, no doubt. It's going to be interesting to see how he comes out on this. So I've not seen any comments any quarter about Trump or what's happening and et cetera. And so as long as we're getting pretty close to the break, we got another couple of minutes, maybe a minute and a half here. And we've got you for an hour and a half. So I'm glad you brought up the Chicago thing there and all of the crime, and that gave us the chance to get into Rahmi, which I really wanted to do because I know that you've got a little bit better knowledge about him than most. This guy's real pivotal in all their stuff, and he's really a guy to watch. And Chicago's a city and a metro area to watch, too, I believe.
Oh, sure.
As we get into the second half, I'd like to hear what you think about Trump and how it's affected the enemy and some of the things they're doing and these ridiculous antics by all these snowflakes and some of the things that are coming out. It's just absolutely unbelievable.
Well, I wrote quite a bit about Trump back in November. I put up a lot of my articles on my schedule, on my radio schedule page. And I did a program on him, a three-hour program on him. And that was immediately after the election that I made my statements about him. And I haven't really changed my mind much.
Okay, well, I'd be interested to see if he has adhered to some of the things that you thought and the insights that you had back then. We'll discuss that and no telling whatever else on the other side with Deanna Spingola, our guest today.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate. No fear. Real people. Real radio.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good idea, especially in these times. Here we come back in the second segment, second lap around the old radio ranch corral, Deanna Spingola, our guest today. First time in 2017, we've had Deanna on the program. We discussed a little bit about Chicago and Rahm Emanuel, it's an illustrious mayor. And we wanted to move on a little bit into Trump. And you said, as we were going into the break, that you'd written, did a show and wrote a number of articles and had, laid out your feelings and thoughts on it. My point, question, I guess, is he done anything in the first couple of weeks that deviated from what you thought?
No. Not really. He's pretty much, followed, right along with what I anticipated he would do. And you look at his cabinet picks, they're all big business. Take a look at the one individual who is, let me just bring up this page here, Sonny Perdue, Secretary of the Department of Agriculture. I mean, that is just about the worst person in the world to pick.
Now, is that the Perdue from the Perdue chicken family?
I'm not sure. Sonny Perdue. I have not looked at that. But that would be something to look at.
Then why did you say he's so terrible? Because I don't know anything about him. I'm just being quite honestly just asking a question.
Well, he is the people. Okay, let me read you something that Catherine Paul, the associate director of the Organic Consumers Association, has the story. Trump heaped predictable praise on Sonny Perdue, promising that the former governor of Georgia will deliver big results for all Americans who earn their living off the land. The Grocery Manufacturers Association, that multi-million-dollar lobbying group that represents Monsanto, Dow, DuPont, Coca-Cola, General Mills, praised Perdue's nomination. Now, if Monsanto is praising Perdue's nomination, you know who he's going to be favoring.
Yeah, certainly. I have no idea about that. I've forgotten. I remember that name from when I lived in Atlanta for so many years, but I've been gone a lot of years, and I think I was gone when he was the governor. Yeah, I'm not defending the guy. I don't think anybody's going to be perfect, but
he's a former fertilizer salesperson. At one time, he owned Houston Fertilizer and Grain, which after its acquisition of Milner Milling Company morphed into AgriStar, a grain business with operations across Georgia and South Carolina. This guy is into synthetic fertilizers, and he has no qualms about taking government handouts. The Environmental Working Group, EWG, reports that between 1995 and 2014, he cashed in almost $300,000 in taxpayer-funded subsidies for his various businesses. He likes GMO corn, he likes GMO cotton, and he likes GMO soy. Okay? And this guy is, he's all for Monsanto.
No, I certainly wouldn't agree with any of those positions. I don't agree with him. Which other particular cabinet picks did you find? Because it's kind of odious on that guy's background, at least from, I think, our point of view. Did you find anybody else as much so?
Decided or thought about is Elliot Abrams. Now, I wrote an article back 2005 about PNAC, a project for a new American century.
Right.
Elliot Abrams was one of the co-signers for PNAC.
Yes, he was back. He came in on that whole Bush-Reagan bunch back then, I believe, Elliot Abrams.
Okay, in 1998, January 26, 1998, the PNAC warlords, in a letter to President Clinton, urged him to invade Iraq to depose Saddam Hussein. This letter was signed by Elliot Abrams, Richard L. Armitage, William J. Bennett, Jeffrey Bergner, John Bolton, Paula Dobriansky, Francis Fukuyama, Robert Kagan, Zalmay Khalilzad, William Crystal, Richard Pearl, Peter Rodman, Donald Rumsfeld, William Schneider, Vin Weber, Paul Wolfowitz, R. James Woolsey, and Robert B. Zolik. So, I mean, to think about, Elliot Abrams was one of the original PNACers. You know, I mean, that they wanted this new Pearl Harbor. And for Trump to even suggest anybody from the PNAC crowd is, well, I don't think it's such a great idea at all.
Well, I'm not sure what capacity he's in, and I didn't even know he assigned him in there. Okay, I mean, the ones that I've been looking at are Tillerman, the Secretary of State, and I just don't follow all this stuff, and I can't even imagine that you come in there as a president with no political background and go choose a whole covey of all of these people to head all of these different departments. There's a myriad of them, and come up with sterling appointments in every one. I heard Stone talking the other day about the fact that what had happened is some of the, for example, specifically, ambassadorships, okay? And traditionally, ambassadorships are awarded to people that are the largest campaign donors, okay? So what a lot of these people like Monsanto and these companies did was went out and gave huge amounts of campaign money to Trump through these people, and they've gotten those people appointed through that mechanism.
Exactly.
Okay,
but that's still very orchestrated. I mean, you know, what he promised the voters is that he was going to drain the swamp, not reinfest it.
Well, let's say what he's doing and to drain the swamp and to have dramatic results within 2 weeks when you're brand new is a little unrealistic, I think, in these circumstances.
Sure.
I like the fact that he's already chopping trade treaties. He's taking these people like the Mexicans and this Australian guy, and he's being tough with them, okay? We've been over and dropped our shorts with them thanks to all of these parasite deals for 30, 40 years or more.
I agree.
You know, those things are turning, I think, pretty dramatically in a couple of weeks.
Oh, I agree with you. But it's actually been, let's see, the 21st of January he was sworn in. So, okay, it's been a couple of weeks. Okay, but, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson has been, well, he's had this illustrious career. Which is okay. I mean, that's not to say, but Elliot Abrams is being considered as the number two guy for the Trump State Department.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, okay? But be that as it may, let's hope that he doesn't get appointed. The other one, let me give you another example. I did a deal on the show on it yesterday. There was a stir, evidently, in D.C. Monday, because on Sunday morning early, in the wee hours of the morning, the new Secretary of Defense, this Mattis guy, actually went and took his first diplomatic mission as Secretary of Defense to South Korea, and he left there early in the morning. And when he went to the plane, he carried his own bags.
Well, that's
and
nice.
Somebody caught a picture of it, and they made such a big deal out of it. So there's somebody that is a, if you didn't know this about him, one of our guy on Friday, Brent, brought all this up. It was very surprising, and it's very promising to me. And I'll give you a specific example of why. This guy, Mattis, is a Marine Corps general. He's what's called a maverick, which means that he worked his way all the way up from the bottom. He didn't go to any officer candidate school or any of the academy or any of that stuff. Okay, He's highly intellectual. He's got a lot personal library of over 7,000 books. All right, and when remember when Trump got out and said something about a week and a half ago in the first weekend about we're going to endorse torture. And then he came back and changed his tune and said, no, we're not. You remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. And when he came out and said that, I thought, what are you saying? Anybody's going to confess to anything if they're, you know, being tortured.
Well, listen to this. He went in and he was, Mathis went in and talked with him, and he came back out and changed the tune and changed the policy and changed his stance, which shows you that he's listening to his advisors. Right?
Well,
but that's
good.
Really a big point right there, and I think that's a very big positive. I saw the same thing happen today with all of this backlash they've got going on the executive order to ban travel for 90 days from 7 Islamic countries. Okay? And all you see the furor and the uproar from all the snowflakes, all right? Well, today the Homeland Security guy got up in front of Congress and fell on his sword. And he said, it's my fault for rolling it out prematurely. And so he's got people in those key positions that look like, and he's willing to listen. It looks like he's got people that are loyal. So, 2 weeks in, you know, I'm willing to give him a little grace period. Chopping down trees, and I can see visibly how upset our enemies are, and I can see that in a very short period of time, he's already rattled the very foundations of their multi-generational agenda in less than a month.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Okay. So those are the things that I'm looking at in the big picture, and I'll tell you what else I like is that he's coming out, and another thing that he looks like he's going to do is get rid of the Johnson Amendment. He's already talking about it publicly. Do you know what that is?
The Johnson Amendment, no.
Mm-hmm. It's the linkage of the separation of church and state deal with 501c3 churches that Lyndon Johnson first put in 1954. He's already talking about getting rid of that.
I do know what that is, yes.
So I'd say those are pretty seminal things, especially for a maverick. Talk about mavericks. You got a maverick president here that's swinging. I call it Excalibur, you know.
Sure.
Swinging it pretty hard, it appears to me. And I'm aghast in many respects for several reasons, Deanna, because I didn't think it would have been possible for somebody to have run the gauntlet and gotten to this position of power. And still be living and breathing, okay?
Yeah.
And then to come out and do as much damage to their agenda in such a short period of time, and it shows what I've talked about publicly for a long time, is that their hold is very fragile. And what gave me that idea, we know how sensitive they are whenever you're having a meeting or anywhere, they're out taking your license tag number and they're trying to get people in there to hear what you're saying and keeping dossiers on you. That doesn't show somebody that's real secure in their position of power.
Okay.
To me.
Okay.
That shows somebody that anytime, we're scared they're going to get something started. We got to monitor it. You know, it's all that paranoid stuff. And it shows, to me, it shows that what I've come to understand is their power is all masked on this fraud of how they tricked you into this other status so they can make these laws and attach them to you and run the show. And it really boils down to almost that simple. So Trump's shaking up the monkeys. My biggest hope is they can get my stuff to them. Because he seems to be open and receptive. I mean, he's listening to alt media. He's, you know, he's got an open channel, and we'll see what goes forward. I'm kind of a glass half full guy anyway. I like to be, and boy, I sure am hoping this continues to fulfill my unexpectations the way it has been.
Sure, I'm kind of concerned about the person that he has chosen to head the CIA. Because this is somebody that believes that products should not, that the consumer has no business knowing whether something is GMO or not. He's totally against that.
I'm kind of concerned about the CIA, period.
Oh, so am I. I would like to see Trump dismantle Homeland Security.
Yep.
Because that whole Homeland Security was put up in order to run, as my guest from last Saturday said, was to run the oh gosh, I just had a brain freeze, was to run the Phoenix program in this country with focus centers all over the place, so that, and infiltration into every possible organization that you can imagine. So, I mean, how is he going to backtrack back to 2011 and dismantle some of these horrid programs that have been put into place in order to restrict American travel, restrict Americans in so many other aspects of their lives?
Well, Obama had a deal last year when there was some kind of a Syrian thing, and he restricted immigration for there for 6 months. He didn't see any damn hubbub and uproar and all that crap about it back then. You know, this is all paid, staged crap. This is because this is the only defense they've got. Okay,
and
all these people that come up in these schools where they've altered the curriculum, where nobody passes and nobody fails and nobody wins on the playground and nobody does this, and everybody whines. And now you see what's happening. You see all of them whining, for God's sake. Okay,
exactly. Well, I agree with you there totally. And the ban affected 109 people. That's it.
Yeah, I know.
It's
ridiculous. Now, I had a clip. If I could play clips, believe I'd be playing this like almost like bumper music, all right? I talked about it on the film. I saw it over on Before It's News the other day. It was a clip of a TV station or radio station, I'm not sure which, in New York City on 9/11. And they got a hold of Donald Trump after the buildings fell as the city's premier building.
Oh.
Have you ever heard that?
No.
I'll try and find it and get it to you. And he comes right out and says, hey, listen, planes could not have done this. They had to use bombs. That I was in the structural engineer for the World Trade Center, was on my staff, and he took me down there after the first bombing before that, and I saw the damage and the buildings had held. He said it had to be used bombs this time. Well, that's the guy we're talking about that's sitting in the presidency right now.
Hmm. Well, at least he knows that it wasn't planes.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'm going to tell you what, Donald J. Trump is no dummy. It may be a lot of things he is, and it may be a lot of things he's not, but he ain't no dummy.
Okay.
So we'll see as we go forward. I keep hearing him making, just different remarks and things. This is one thing that's really interesting, the way you and I, Deanna, know the enemy.
Yes. Now, what about, have you heard Mike Pence's, his vice president, it's like a 3-minute tape about their allegiance to Israel? And about how a new administration was going to put Israel first. Have you heard that tape at all?
No, I haven't, and that doesn't really surprise me. I've heard some real questionable things about Pence, okay? But this is what I wanted to say. Knowing our enemies the way you and I know them, and that he's going to get in there with these America First ideals and go in there and get head, face, abreast, clashing with people like Bibi, and let's see where that relationship stands in 9 to 12 months.
Right, because initially they were fairly good friends, supposedly. And there were several. Now, I read a lot of the promises, a lot of the information that was on the Trump campaign website before the election. And there's a lot of things that was, a lot that bothered me quite a lot. And Jason Greenblatt was the co-chairman of the Israel Advisory Committee for Donald Trump. And they had this joint statement, and they made all these promises to Israel. And that really bothered me. There's 15 promises that they made to Israel. And the other thing that I find...
They're real good about that. They like to corner people because Cynthia McKinney is the one that clued us into that. They would you like to sign the promise? Would you like to sign the promise?
Okay.
They do that kind of crap.
Okay? Sure.
So, and I don't know that that's unusual on anything that you're going to say, and it's for this reason. Both his kids are married into pretty large Jewish families.
Exactly.
Both in real estate, I think, in New Jersey and New York, and he's been doing business in and around these people for his entire career and raised up there. So,
yeah, that is absolutely true. Now,
so those things, I think, have a difference, and it's as these two divisions of thought clash as we go forward is what I think is going to be super interesting.
Right. Now, Jared Kushner's father financed a lot of the Jewish settlements in Palestine.
Right.
Which is kind of...
Was there not an announcement in the first week that they were going to have to stop building
settlements? Yes.
Came from the Trump administration, floated by somebody in the administration,
yes.
I think, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So there's all these inconsistencies that are troubling.
Well, there you see the divide I'm talking about. The America first and the Israeli first divide.
Yeah.
That issue right there, okay, perfectly defines what I'm talking about, and I think you can easily, anybody in the audience, and you know how arrogant, how much hubris these people have, okay, how cunning they are. They're
absolutely.
Downright damn cunning, okay?
Absolutely.
So you know that this is an absolute key issue and that it's going to be contentious in the future. My read. That's my tea leaf read.
Okay, and the other thing, too, that lends credibility to what you're saying is that the media, any time that Trump's name comes up, everything is negative, 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 negative. And we know who runs the media.
You ought to live outside the country and see the people's idea, you know, because I get constantly asked, well, how do you like Trump? Do you like Trump? And they're shocked when I tell them, yeah, that he's a good man, you know. And
yeah.
Let me tell you what I base that on, Deanne. And I don't mean the guy's pretty well showing that he is. But even months ago, and I said it on the program a lot, there were two things. The fact that I watched that interview he did, a 30-minute interview with Oprah Winfrey 25 years ago. And he was saying essentially the exact same thing in the campaign. And the people that have known him since his childhood, almost to the person, say he's a good person. Right? So when you got that kind of endorsement in those, to me, key important areas, I'm willing to be optimistic.
Well, I am absolutely always willing to say, you know, I was wrong about that or wrong about this. So I'm a wait-and-see person as far as Trump goes.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping he continues swinging Excalibur the way he's doing it. He's probably never going to do everything perfect, and he's in a really treacherous arena where he's got whole bunch of very powerful people who love to throw a bolo around his feet when he's walking down the aisle somewhere. And I know he's conscious of all that. He's smart. The guy doesn't smoke. He doesn't drink. He's a workaholic, and he's evidently like Thomas Edison. He doesn't even hardly
sleep. He doesn't sleep. He's up in the middle of the night.
Thomas Edison was like that. He had a chair in his office, in his laboratory there in Orange, New Jersey, and when he got tired, he'd go lay, sit in it for 4 hours, up to 4 hours. He'd get up and start working. He said there's just not enough time otherwise.
Wow. I've heard that too. Rick Perry is energy secretary. I mean, knowing what he did in Texas, oh, gosh. I mean, the guy is so bought and paid for it. It's just, and I don't know.
You know, you got to, I think, also look at it from another standpoint. Is that, how big do you think the list is of qualified candidates out there that want the job?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
he's a business guy. He's come in and got a business mindset. He's cutting 2/3 of the regulations out. That's one thing I love that he did is we're really conscious of regulations here because they're the ones, the little man-made laws that they man makes in regulatory form to control the new slaves, the serfs.
Sure.
Okay. So, and what he came in and says, we're going to get rid of 2/3 of those things. And for every new regulation that you write, you got to get rid of 2 old ones to do it.
Sure. Well, if he could get rid of the trade agreements, that would be absolutely super. If he went back and changed the Johnson 501c3 situation, that would be really super great, because there's a lot of those organizations that are in bed with the government, in bed with constant warfare, that are raking in billions of dollars and not paying any taxes.
Absolutely, and he wants to go back. I tell you, the thing that's really exciting for me, because he's got a chance to literally institute a new monetary system, too. So is he consciously going forward on an agenda to bankrupt everything and then rebuild it in that form? He's got a number of gold bugs on his cabinet that are notoriously so. So there's a lot of interesting ifs and buts. And, you know, what the old saying is, Deanna, ifs and buts were candy and nuts. We'd all have a Merry Christmas. Yeah, and then Roger going to be back on the other side. Here's a break, and little Bonnie Ray. See you in a minute, Courtney.
Population keeps on bleeding. Nation bleeding. Still more bleeding. Life is funny. Skies are sunny. Bees made honey.
Alvin, you can go put the lead guitar up over the corner and we'll get started in on the third lap around the old Radio Ranch here at the Radio Ranch radio program. True Frequency Radio Network. I always try and thank Chris Geo for what he and his associates here at the network have put together. It's a wonderful platform. I'm real happy to be associated with it. Our guest today, Deanna Spingola, on the 7th of February. And talking about just events of the common day. We got you for the last segment here, Deanna, and then you got to go. You had some prior commitments, and happy and thank you for spending your time with us today. I would wonder if you had anything that you wanted to pontificate on, if it wanted me to see if anybody in the audience wanted to call in, if they had any specific questions for you, because I know a lot of the audience is familiar with you and your work. Did you have any particular place you'd like to take it?
No. I always enjoy callers. But I noticed during the break they mentioned that Betsy DeVos had been confirmed as Secretary of Education. Which is, do you know who she is?
I know that isn't she somebody that wanted to tear the education department down or something? He had a couple of those people that he put in those positions.
Which would be good.
Yeah, the EPA is one of them that I think is really highly contested. That wasn't the one Purdue is at, is it? No, he was in agriculture. I think it's the EPA where they were putting somebody in that had publicly wanted to destroy the EPA. So there were a couple of those appointments which I thought from that respect were very favorable. And,
sure.
I'm willing to give the guy a chance. He seems to be amenable to his advisors. And, you know, the Bible says seek wise counsel. He's got a really interesting Presbyterian background, and Brent, our Friday co-host guy, is pretty up on it, has given us some information on it. He just, you know what he talks about, and that is my hope and prayer, Deanna, is this. I talk about it on the program, that you look back through history and that we know of, people like Saul that was converted from the tax collector that used to persecute Christians to Paul. And you see that people that are touched in some position of their life take on a whole new mantra and direction and kind of a whole new persona almost. And it's my hope and prayer that that's what's going on and we can actually see that continue. So,
absolutely.
I said, I'm the optimistic guy, but some of the things that I'm seeing early on are real encouraging. There was a little cartoon I saw after the first week in office. And it showed, I like these political cartoons, And it showed him coming, like walking down the street in Washington, and it showed the manhole cover in the street being raised up, and it said Trump's best friend the first week, and coming out from the manhole cover it said American worker.
That's interesting. And you know, Ronald Reagan always promised, he said, oh, I'm going to get rid of the Department of Education. It should never have been federal to begin with. So if that is her objective, then more power to her. And I hope that that can happen, because education should be local.
And interesting that Pence, for the first time ever in the history of the country, was the deciding vote in a cabinet appointment. Shows you the way that the opposition is formed. And very, very interesting things evolving right here in front of us, I think.
Right. And if he can get, okay, the big things for this country. The wealth of the country is determined by the production of the citizens. If he can get rid of those trade agreements and bring companies back to this country, that would be great. And the other thing that he would have to do, because a lot of the companies left the country, not because of just labor costs, but because of the extras that the companies were having to pay in terms of medical insurance. I mean, that was a big reason why a lot of companies left. They simply could not afford all the extras for their employees.
I know that Chicago has got a real drain on jobs coming because of all the disasters you guys have got up there in the pension fund situation.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's just every time I read something, it just gives me cold chills.
Oh, it's terrible. And, I mean,
more Romville administration, not that it wasn't in any kind of great shape when he got it, but he certainly hadn't done much to turn it around.
Right. Well, you have people that have been in, that have led this state for such a long time, and they're not willing to give up their powers of position or the money that they've been making. I mean, it's just disgusting. Rauner,
they get exposed too to some extent.
Right.
Possibly.
Oh, absolutely. And Rauner really can't go forward unless he has their support, and they're not about to give it up. Because they're not about to support him, you know, like Mike Madigan, and Lisa Madigan. I mean, they've been power holders here in this, state for the very longest time. I mean, and Bruce Rauner had all of these wonderful objectives and goals that he had before he was elected. And, they've gone nowhere because he can't get the support of the Madigans. And then you have to look at his background, too. He made most of his money by running rest homes, and we know what happens in some people know what happens in rest homes.
I'd rather not. Almost. Yeah. I mean, I know it's a reality.
Yeah, they just drug him up and kill him. I mean, it's pretty awful. So I guess everybody has some dirt, except you and I, of course. We don't have any.
No, I'll be the first to tell you. I keep telling people, and Tom, especially my associate Tom Schramm, is usually on today, and he's off with his family today skiing. And I said, Tom and I did not back into the Patriot movement through the exit door in the choir room. Okay, I mean, I promise you, I came out of 20 years in and around the big time record business and all that stuff and everything that I went through in my youth, and he had quite a colored and a checkered youth too, so we both relate to it. Let me see, we actually got a caller here, and let's see, it's from Houston. It shows on my board, and I can hear by that little ting that it's our friend Sam. Hey, Sam from Houston, how the world are you doing?
I'm blessed, and I hope you and Diana are doing fine, too. Roger, I don't know if you know it or not, but you have one of the premier researchers in the world as a guest, and please take advantage of her. And she is absolutely the top as far as doing her research. And what I'd like for you to do is just kind of like let her go as far as letting her tell what she knows about the promises that Trump has made to the Zionists, And I'm going to jump off and listen offline, okay?
All right, we'll do that. And I think that's going to be a really interesting thing that develops as we go forward, Sam. And we appreciate your comments. And, yes, I try and have people of that caliber of that have excelled in their own areas of study and chosen expertise, and happy to have Deanna in this one. And very well aware of her background, because quite frankly, I listened to her program an awful lot, especially back in the old days when I was listening to more radio. That's why I asked you, Deanna, if you'd like to take it anywhere, let's take it and give Sam the direction. I'm going to unmute you, Sam, because of that little nuance in your phone, buddy. And thanks for calling.
Thanks, Roger. We stopped talking.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, that, he's a good guy.
That's very nice.
Yeah, got some really nice people listen to the program, Deanna, and probably a lot of listeners that listen to your show, too. Well, tell us about what Sam was laying out, or what you know of the promises to the Zionists, and let's get a clear-cut list of these things so we can watch it as we go forward. I think it's a great idea, Sam. Thank you.
Well, actually, as you mentioned before, it's a complete list of Trump campaign promises to Israel. And most of these were on his website, and this is just a comprehensive list. And let me just scroll down here.
Before you get into it, let me reiterate again, and where my ears perked up when you said the list. Is it like the pledge? Because Cynthia McKinney, the congresswoman from Georgia, who was so against these people that they got run out of office there.
Absolutely.
And she came, I heard her do a whole thing on this. Well, here's what they do. They'd go and say, okay, we're going to do a fundraiser for you. And she'd send out invitations. It's going to be at somebody's house and all that set up. And a couple of days before, they call and say, oh, you're going to sign the pledge, aren't you? Oh, if you can't sign the pledge, I can't have this at my house for you.
Holy cow.
Okay, that kind of stuff. Prevalent, two or three. And she named other people around the country they had done it to. So when you're laying out this, keep that in mind, because I have a feeling this is what some of that is. And, of course, this is going to be what they want. But I'd like to hear what it is, and so we'll know as we go forward to see. There's going to be some lines of divergence here, I believe, in this this wonderful relationship with the chosen people. And, of course, Deanna, you know the question you always need to ask, don't you?
Yeah.
Chosen by who and for what?
Yeah, they chose themselves. I mean, they're Khazars. Yeah. They have absolutely no connection, ethnic connection to Palestine. They're Turkish in nature. They worship the phallic symbol. They're not a very nice group of people. But anyway, that being said, I'm going to jump down to number 5 and, the Memorandum of Understanding. Signed by the American and Israeli governments is a good first step, but there is much more to be done. A Trump administration will ensure that Israel receives maximum military, strategic, and tactical cooperation from the United States. And the Memorandum of Understanding will not limit the support that we give. Further, Congress will not be limited to give support greater than that provided by the Memorandum of Understanding if it chooses to do so. Israel and the United States benefit tremendously from what each country brings to the table. The relationship is a two-way street. But as you mentioned before, this memorandum... Go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out where the other direction comes from. If this is a two-way street... Where's our side?
We don't have a side.
I see the one-way road going down.
Exactly. But they need...
This is like heads I win and tails you lose kind of deal.
Sure. Well, they're exploiting the country. When Clinton was Secretary of State, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, I mean, there were 300 signatures on a letter to her stating their support of Israel. And that's another thing. Is Trump going to prosecute her in any way? Or has she prosecuted herself? Has she been shown to be the criminal that she actually is? Yes. I mean,
Yes, and I'll tell you what, that evidently is going to continue being exposed.
And it should be exposed. And Comey, and his, see, the reason that Comey covered her butt is because he was the guy that laundered the money that was coming from the MENA drug operation, which the Clintons were very heavily involved in. And so he had a dog in the fight, so to speak, because he certainly wasn't going to go after her, because then, you know, they were old buddies.
You know what? That sounds like dangerous territory to be on, because that sounds like Vince Foster territory.
It is Vince Foster. Yes.
Secret accounts and secret monies and stuff. That's Vince Foster territory.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I played on my program back in November was the, it was a tape. It was a, it was called, what was it called? I have so many links on my November 2016 schedule page. It has all these links. The Trump Woolsey bait and switch, complete list of Trump campaign promises to Israel, the Israel Advisory Committee, Trump releases Israel policy 6 days before the election. Let's click on that, because this came from his campaign. It's not something that we made up, but it came from his campaign. It came from, let's see. I hate these kind of websites. You go to them, they want you to sign up for something. It's things that he has said and things that he has indicated on his own website. And, let's see. Just a week before election day, and after an estimated 22 million people had already voted, voters finally have a clearer idea of Donald Trump's stances on Israel. On November 1st, David M. Friedman, and I played a tape by Friedman. It was about a 20-minute tape. But David M. Friedman and Jason Greenblatt, the lawyers who head the Republican candidate's Israel Advisory Committee, published a joint statement that provides some important insights into how Trump views this ever-vexing corner of the world. And so this is what they came up with, was this list. And so it's not something that they decided that they would do, but it's something that he decided a mere 6 days before. And I think that he was trying to attract Jewish voters. And apparently he did attract some, but the ones that we see, that are in the media do not seem to be a very
But you know whose total support he had, though, don't you?
Who?
Nutricarta and Jews Against Zionism. All those people.
Yes, yes.
The real Jews, if you will, and not the fake Jews. We got fake news, we might as well have fake Jews.
And we do, absolutely.
Oh, I know, blah, blah, shiver me timbers. Like not Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, huh?
Yes. Okay, number two. Let's see. It says, Israel is the state of the Jewish people who have lived in that land for 3,500 years. The state of Israel was founded with courage and determination by great men and women against enormous odds, and is an inspiration to people everywhere who value freedom and human dignity. Well, we talked about Rahm Emanuel's father, and Wikipedia removed any information about Rahm Emanuel's father.
Imagine that. Tell me it's not true.
Yeah, Benjamin Emanuel actually was in charge of planting bombs on Palestinian buses, and he did have participate in the bombing. He was with Ergun, and he participated between 1947 and 1948 when they transferred, when the transfer was taking place. And of course was taken, it was a purchase deal because, Truman, who is the one that, formalized the state of Israel, was given $2 million in a suitcase.
Yep. Right, during the campaign against Dewey, remember when the exactly. Chicago newspaper came out and said Dewey defeats Truman?
Well, that didn't happen, did it?
I know, and because that money came in at the last and allowed exactly. him to overcome that and win the election, and that's why the hell he signed that deal with Israel. You know what his statement was to his vice president? I think that he wrote in his book. I wonder if you've ever heard this quoted, and I'm not sure I'll get it correct totally, but I think I can get the spirit of it. And he said, Jesus Christ couldn't please him when he was here on earth. How do you expect me to?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that was a quote from Harry Truman.
Yep.
Freemason or what all, that was a quote from Harry Truman out of his vice president's book and attributed to him by him.
Interesting.
Jesus Christ could not please him when he was here. How do you expect me to?
Well, he referred to them as the synagogue of Satan.
So, and that's where we get all the crap we've had since is one suitcase with a couple of $1 million of Federal Reserve notes.
Yes.
Is what, well, is what the leverage was applied.
Sure. And Benjamin, actually Rahm Emanuel's father, that's not their last name. It was something else before. He was from Russia. His real name was Auerbach, Auerbach, and he was blowing up the British transports, and he was blowing up everybody.
Yep,
this guy was just a murderer.
You know, when in World War II, when Hitler made he got all of the ghetto Jews. These are the ones they don't like. And these are the why you've got the Jews against Zionism and Nutricarda. You see, those are the old Hasidic Jews. Those are the ones that these Zionist Jews despise. Those are the ones Theodore Herzl despised. You look, they live in a ghetto over there. We want to assimilate with the nice Austro-Germans. Look at their society. Okay? And that was the way they viewed it. And so Hitler said, look, to the international community, you remember this, Deanna, give me $3 million for the Jewish community. And you remember they turned them down. And the guy was a doctor. He was a medical doctor that was the big Zionist. And he said, no, don't, you can have these. Just give me this little group over here. And that's the group that went down and founded Israel, Satan's Sandbox, I refer to it as.
But it was already peopled it was already populated.
You know, in that thing you read there a minute ago, let me take you back. And the last of that last sentence you read, something about recognizing human rights or something?
Yeah.
Why don't they recognize the human rights of these people they slaughter?
Well, they don't. Okay. You know that the UN has sanctions against Israel that we never hear about, and we recently heard about the sanction against Iran. Okay. The UN has 177 sanctions or problems with Israel. Do you know how many they have with Palestine?
Probably none.
One. Do we ever hear about the problems that the UN is having against Israel? Has anything ever been done to stop these people in Israel from slaughtering their neighbors or from building walls to keep keep the Palestinians from essential things that they need to keep them from going to their jobs? No, we never hear a thing about it.
How about just killing them outright or getting the pregnant women that are in labor and not letting them through the gates there to get to a hospital?
Exactly.
How about some of these little righteous little stunts that God's chosen, that's a small g by the way, God's chosen pull over
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Satan's Sandbox, huh? No, they can't stand a wall Trump's going to build. What about the one they built with our damn tax money, by the way?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, number seven, let's go down here. The U.S. should cut off funds for the UN Human Rights Council a body dominated by countries presently run by dictatorships that seems solely devoted to slandering the Jewish state. UNESCO's attempt to disconnect the state of Israel from Jerusalem is a one-sided attempt to ignore Israel's 3,000-year bond to its capital city and is further evidence of the enormous anti-Israel bias of the United Nations. Well, I just told you that the United Nations has 177 issues with Israel, mainly over human rights. And yet they come across with this, this number seven talking about human rights and the UN Human Rights Council.
Don't forget the strongest terms that Jesus used on them was hypocrites, Deanna.
Yes. Talk about hypocritical. Hypocrite. Oh, gosh. And number eight, the U.S. should view the effort to boycott, divest from, and sanction Israel is inherently anti-Semitic. Here we go. Here we go with this. You know, when everything else fails, just bring up the word, the term anti-Semitic.
It's a trick. We always use it.
Yes. Did you practice that?
I practiced it a little, yes. Could you tell?
We've all heard that, and they never stop using it. It's a term because it works.
That's all their stuff. You see, this is their weakness, is they're in that trap right there. They have to use it because it's always worked. There's so much at stake, they can't really afford to deviate. Therefore, it becomes their Achilles heel. If you study them, they become predictable.
Because
they always do the same thing over and over again.
They always do. And yet, most people don't get it. They don't study it enough to recognize what is going on. They don't study it enough to look into the Holocaust and say, okay, there was never 6 million Jews under Hitler's jurisdiction ever. There were more Jews in Miami and New York than there were in
Deanna, you're so delightful, and I just love this conversation. We're going to have you back and have you do it again, but we're running out of time. Tell the folks where they can get you real quick for your music. You might hear it before you get through.
Okay, Spingola.com. Just visit that website, and you can see what my books that I've written and the articles that I've written and my anti-Semitic leanings.
Oh, goody, goody. We'll go over there. Thank you, Deanna. We'll have you back, sweetie. And as they say down here, Feliz Año. Happy New Year, okay?
Thank you. Same to you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care.